Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck, and I'm here with my friends. Hi, guys.
Hello, this is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton.
And this is Reverend Dr. Bill Holton. Glad to be with you again. And as you know, we are the co-founders of an online ministry called the Global Center for Spiritual Awakening.com. And we also provide a shortcut so you can get to us sooner than later. And that's called yourspiritualpractice.com.
Yeah, and I always like to repeat that, yourspiritualpractice.com, because that's the one I remember. And then I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com. That should be easy to remember. I'm always, it always strikes me as funny as why people can't find me. They say, where are you? We can't find you. They just put my name in there, right? On the Google search. Same for yours. When I couldn't remember yours, it was easy to find.
You can search our name and you can find us.
Tons, yes. Mm-hmm. We use my website to post to my doings and where I'm going. I don't really have a gig until late February. And then there's my Absolute Word, which is my weekly blog, which we share at the end of this program. So as we get started, it is another beautiful day in my consciousness.
It's another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And it's another beautiful, beautiful day romping in my consciousness.
Yeah, so we started a new first segment. We called it Science, Pseudoscience, and Spirituality. And we actually are using that as a loose title, aren't we, guys?
We are.
This is if something passes in front of us that we find interesting, that would be helpful. So our topic today is How to Read Above Your Level by Ryan Holiday. And it's not really about metaphysics, but the idea is maybe giving you some tips on how to read metaphysics. Mm-hmm. And then after the break, we're going to do Helicopter God. Now, this is interesting. Cher recommends these, and Bill has talked about Helicopter God several times, but we never really stopped and defined it like he does in the book. We've done a little short definition. So that's what we're going to do there. And the daily word, which is going to be made into the absolute word, is for December 8th, 2019. And the word is peace. And of course, it's December and it's Sunday. We're doing the words of Advent, right? Mm. Yes, indeed. And so this is really when unity gets a little, I don't know what you call it, schizophrenic or whatever, because we do delight in celebrating Christmas and the whole Christmas story and the birth of Jesus. And the cool thing is we now don't get wrapped up into whether it's the time of year or he couldn't have been born on that day. Remember, you know, all that stuff. Or did Jesus exist? We just go with the story, right? Yeah. And we interpret it metaphysically as an awakening of the awareness of the Christ in us, which is the awakening of our divinity.
Yes.
Yes. And I'd like to say that on our website, if people want to take a quick peek at our blog, we actually have a blog that lays out the metaphysical interpretation of all the parts of the Nativity.
Oh, good. Fantastic. So, and I've actually done a talk on it recently. So it's called No Room in the Inn. If people want to just Google that, I did that last Sunday. All right. I'm sure Bill's is more detailed and had your help, right, Cher?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, we did that one together.
Oh, how fun. Okay, so let's get romping. We're going to look at How to Read Above Your Level by Ryan Holiday. I don't know how much we're going to get into it. I just know that it's really important for us to know how to read some of these old-time teachers. And Ryan gives us a good reason why to do it other than understand the physics.
And can I just say, not even just the older things, which is really where he was addressing it, but I think it also applies when we, like with science, since we are moving into a science, pseudoscience, and spirituality series now, a lot of people get really scared when they see any of the quantum physics terminology or articles about science. They kind of turn it off and don't know how to read it. And I was that way. Even when we got into your metaphysics class, it was one of the first classes we took with our, when we first began our training. And I, I really was scared to death. I thought, I'm not going to be able to understand this. But because it was required, you have no choice.
Right.
You can surprise yourself with how much you can understand once you give yourself the opportunity. So this was particularly an interesting article to me. I thought people could really use this at so many different levels.
And just so the folks hear my side of it quickly is that once I took your class, we were down in Florida when we took your class, and when you went into the metaphysical interpretation of things, that's when I realized that I was home.
Sweet.
In this
sweet
movement.
Yeah.
That this was the right movement for me to be sweet involved in spiritually.
Yeah. And now look how far you've come.
Well, I hope so.
As far as the metaphysical interpretation, I don't know anybody in the Unity movement that's done what you've done, is actually do a, what do you call it, a transliteration metaphysical interpretation of the four Gospels.
Oh, thank you.
And the Book of Revelation.
And they're also annotated, too, so that the reader can know where I got the justifications for my interpretation. So it's just not a Fig Newton of Bill's imagination. I've got some documentation to at least support my view.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because in Ryan's article, he talks about the importance of looking at the documentation. And one thing I've never done, and he recommended, is if there's a bibliography, find a book in the bibliography that then you feel drawn to in some way and read that book.
Yep. Yeah.
Which is nothing I've ever done. Have you done that? You probably have, Bill.
Well, yeah, all the time, because I'll want to draw from those books. I'm not a, what Sharon and I call religion. It's a one-channel interpretation.
Yeah.
And the founder of that particular movement is just a one channel. And by looking at the bibliographies, you can at least get two or three or four different channels of the same information. And their take on it. So I found that helpful.
Very, very helpful. So those are kind of the high points for me. I could say more. Let's hear more from you. What do you want to say, Cher?
Before we even dive into a couple of things in the article that we thought were interesting, Bill found some really interesting research around people's reading levels now, because you start thinking, what would be above people's level?
And it's going to be shocking. For example, the average American adult's reading level is that of a ninth grader. However, most novels and most written material is written at a seventh grade level. And
wow.
studies show that the adults prefer reading two grades, quote unquote, below their ability. And I think part of this is also due to the fact that there's a lot more texting going on now, and a lot of different words made up and abbreviated, et cetera. And if, for example, it says, how many people in the U.S. are illiterate?
Wait till you hear this.
Approximately 32 million adults in America are considered to be illiterate.
That's in America.
That's over 10% of the population,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes.
Wow.
50%, yep. And it says that the average IQ of the American adults are between 90 and 110. And anything over 120 is considered superior. And 70% of the U.S. population has an average IQ.
Wow, that is really interesting statistics, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we would understand people, especially when they're doing, I would say, pleasure reading, that they'd want to be in their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And two levels lower is definitely a comfort zone, isn't it?
Well, because they don't have to think.
Right. And I have to say, recently, I wish I could remember the situations, but I was reading something and I could clearly see, I understood what each word meant, but I didn't understand what the combination meant.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, wow, what was that?
Yes.
Yeah. Sometimes when you get in groups, a discussion group, we'll come home and I'll say to Bill, you know, I understood every word that person was saying, but when they put those words together, it made no sense to me at all.
Yeah.
And I think they were just trying to impress the group with the words they knew.
Well, that could possibly be it. And then there's the whole issue, especially in new thought groups, people string together all of these jargon phrases And when you put them all together, it sounds good, but doesn't say much at all, right?
It's gobbledygook, yeah. Yep.
So we're hoping we don't come across as sounding like gobbledygook. That's for sure. And this guy is really promoting the idea to intentionally find books above your reading level. And it makes such sense. Isn't that how we learned as kids? As we went up in grade, they gave us more and more difficult levels of reading. And I don't even know how they evaluate reading level other than by vocabulary.
I know there's a whole little logarithm that they use with that, but it's a lot lower than I would imagine.
Yeah, it's shocking. And I will confess, so in the metaphysical books, there's a lot of the old books that I just found so difficult to read. I just put them down. And the other Emily Cady books I found really difficult to read. Mm-hmm. And then who was her teacher and Fillmore's teacher that was in Chicago? Emma Hopkins. Wow, yeah. Really hard to learn. And our religious science or science, what they're called now?
Something
anyway. So they're into reading Troward, who was even more difficult to read.
And so you also have the combination of their content plus the language, the way language was used then, which is different than it is now.
Yes, indeed.
Much more formal with their terminology.
And I think their vocabularies were probably larger.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Probably true. Yep. Probably true.
Mm-hmm. So what else you got?
Well, I think one of the biggest culprits for me is the school system itself on the reading material that they ask us to read, because we'll be tested on it. So most of us go through high school and college looking for the answers that we think we'll be tested on without really understanding the material. So we'll parrot back the material that we read. So there's no depth at all to our reading or understanding.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we know we're being tested on it. So there's no time that we're going to take for thinking about it and forming opinions about the material.
I was going to say, I think that leads to the issue of being afraid of new material, because why else would we be afraid to read something we might not understand unless we think we're going to be failing a test instead of, I want to read this. And then, and he brings this out in his article, is the names and places and dates are unimportant. The lessons matter.
Now that was really good. So what's the big takeaway rather than, and what are we tested on in school? Names and dates and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it's really about, so how is this impacting me? Right.
Right. And what message does it give me that will help me as I move forward? How can I learn from this?
Yes.
And that goes back to, remember that old quote everybody uses, those who do not understand history are doomed to repeat it, or something like that. And that's why we keep seeing history repeating itself, is we learn all these dates, but we don't learn lessons from what's happened.
Well, there's that. And if that were true, then I've always said, let's stop teaching history. Right, because
I'll vote for that.
Because we're really not. We keep repeating history. I mean,
well, you know, there's also a stereotyping that takes place in school systems where the teachers essentially denigrate a young student for what he or she doesn't know, or think that they don't have the ability to memorize things. For example, our grandson wasn't exactly enamored with having to memorize all of the states and state capitals of the states in America, but he knew every car part you could think of, every automotive part, every part that goes into to vehicles and equipment, every make of car and truck, etc. You're talking about not only memorization there, but he knew the application of the part to the vehicle, what made it work. So he had the intellectual capability. Yeah. He just didn't like memorizing things he felt weren't going to be all that useful.
He would never use them, right?
No.
Yeah. Wow. And another thing with the older writings, especially in Unity, they use words that were common usage then, but not now.
Right.
And I've been sitting here trying to think. Someone wrote to me recently about a quote I have in my latest book, How to Use the Truth, You Know. And that's not the name of the book. It's called Use the Truth, You Know. Mm-hmm. And I can't find it. So there you go. But there was a word there where someone wrote to me and said, I don't understand that word. First of all, cool that the person stopped and asked.
Yes, right? Yes.
That's what we need to do. And mm-hmm. If we're going to read at a higher level, we got to have a dictionary bias.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's another point from this article is that look up words you don't know. Stop and find out what those words mean. And I love he also said, ruin the ending.
Wasn't that amazing?
I thought that was real interesting because you always learn not to do that in books. But if you can understand why something happened, that's more important than what happened.
Right.
And so find out the basic assertions of the book, and then you can kind of read it knowing, like I know I like Agatha Christie as my bubblegum reading. She's an old mystery writer.
Absolutely.
Talk about old writing. It's old fashioned writing, but she has an amazing ability to roll out a mystery. Mm-hmm. And I love to read her after I already know the story, because then I can see how she laid it all out. She tells you all the way through all how it happened, but you have to be able to interpret it. And
right.
Once you know it, you can go back and read it and see that. Or a movie like Sixth Sense.
Yep.
Did you see that? That's another one we had to go watch again right away because I thought they didn't. But you watch it and it's like, wow, they laid it out perfectly. The Sting is another example.
Well, I've got to confess that when I read that, which is on page 3 of his document, I went straight to the conclusion.
Oh, good.
Which is on page 7 of his document. So he may be horrified that I did that. Or maybe not.
No, he'd be thrilled. And what it really does is just review logical things you would do to understand something.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I know we're kind of running over, but I think there's a couple other points I'd really love to bring up, and maybe we can finish with it, because I just think, and maybe it's because I know exactly what he's talking about of being afraid of material. Because if our listeners remember back when we first way back, we did a whole series on Lothar Schaefer.
Yeah, we did.
His mm-hmm. book, and I can't mm-hmm. remember the name of the book now. Anybody remember the
Infinite
name?
Potential.
Infinite Potential.
Infinite Potential. That book scared me to pieces. It felt so far above my ability, and I thought, I am going to feel so stupid being on the show with you two guys and not being able to say anything.
Well, you did pretty well.
Yeah, but being forced into it. And I use some of the things that he mentions here, and it really surprised myself. And
wow,
that's why
that's
I think
great.
It's so important for people to not be afraid of things. And one of the things I wanted to be sure and bring up was what we talked about it before the show, is reading all the stuff that goes around the book, like the introduction, the notes at the bottom, the bibliography, book notes, chapter notes. I used to always skip over that stuff and just dive in. And that gives you so much insight into what's going on in the author's head as he's writing.
I'm on that. I used to skip the introduction. Mm-hmm. And what's the piece called in the beginning when someone else writes
preface.
For you?
The preface.
Mm-hmm. And I found, especially in Lothar Schaefer's case, in that book, I found both the preface and the introduction very important. And I'm talking about the introduction that isn't really part of the book.
Right. It usually tells you how to read the book.
Yeah.
A lot of times it'll give you tips on how to read it, who it's for. It'll give you some premises about the
chapters
book.
I
know in a couple of hours it summarizes the chapters and that kind of thing. So you really get a good overview of the book.
And I try to do that in my books too. Mm-hmm. So it's a really important step not to be forgotten.
And this is one reason I love real books versus, I shouldn't say real books, but print books versus Kindle books, is writing in them.
Yep.
Because and I know you can mark up Kindle books, but to me, I've tried that and it's very hard to find. But a book, you can put little markers in, you can underline, you can write in, which used to go against what they taught you in school. Don't write in a book, don't dog ear a page. But our books, boy, the ones we use a lot, they are just filled with those little notes.
My books are a mess.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I think of that is a well-loved book. Mm-hmm. You know, treating a book like it's a sacred document. Yeah. It's what the thing is saying that might be sacred. the paper it's written on isn't.
Yeah.
I once had a teacher for A Course in Miracles where I put my Course in Miracles book on the floor and he just read me the riot art. That was being disrespectful and all of that.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Please, it's the content that was sacred to me, not the physical book.
Right.
Wow.
That's.
And listening to our conversation about the Holliday's article, I think that a lot of people could benefit reading not only biblical scripture, but scripture from any of the world's major religions, if they could get past the literal interpretations of the books and move toward a more metaphysical, esoteric interpretation. But I think one reason why most people don't is that they've never been taught to increase or upgrade their thinking level.
Right. And we've got to push ourselves to do that.
You really do.
Okay, so let's pivot to the Absolute Word. Okay. The Absolute Word is based on Sunday messages appearing in the Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. And this comes from Sunday, December 8th, 2019. The word is peace. I create a peaceful world as I embody peace. God is not peaceful. God does not have peace. God is the principle of peace we use to be peaceful and to create a peaceful world. Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright. I create peace within me as I hear the first words of the beloved Christmas carol. The peace I feel wells up from the depths of my beingness, from a quiet place, and my awareness of my innate divinity. I feel peaceful each time I visit my inner sanctuary, replacing anything unlike peacefulness. As I choose peace, I am calm and bright throughout my day. I transform stress and tension into productive energy. Every situation and relationship is an opportunity to demonstrate good. Thoughts of peace, words of peace, and peaceful actions fill my day. I create a peaceful world as I embody peace. And so it is, right?
Yes,
it shall be.
Let's go forth using that principle of peace to be peaceful and to share peace with others. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Cher.
Thank you. We enjoyed it.
Yes, we did. Our privilege.
Our privilege to share our thoughts with our listeners. Until the next time, we are signing off. Goodbye.